We will hear argument next in case number 24960, United States v. Alisigwe. We're just going to wait for everybody to get out of the room. Okay, Ms. Cassidy.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The District Court refused to apply Riley to a cell phone search at the border, holding that Riley did not upend long-settled precedent allowing warrantless border searches. The precedents it relied on, however, involved non-cell phone searches, which held that no warrant is required to search other personal effects other than cell phones. The Court was incorrect. Riley did upend the law with respect to cell phone searches. Now, it's important to note at the outset that Riley applied general rule. It stated, we generally, I highlight that, determine whether to exempt a given type of search from the warrant requirement by assessing, on the one hand, the degree to which it intrudes upon an individual's privacy, and on the other, the degree to which it is needed for the promotion of legitimate government.
Right, and so Riley is depending on what the interest is there, right? And they say the search incident to arrest exception is about safety, and it doesn't seem like it's really related to officer safety to do a search of the cell phone. But that just as a factual matter, that doesn't necessarily apply to the border, and then just as a kind of substantive matter, it doesn't seem to apply to the border, right? You can have evidence of criminality or inadmissibility on a cell phone such that the person shouldn't enter the country, or evidence of, you know, what people are calling digital contraband, like the social security numbers here, right?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, the social security numbers are not contraband. They didn't prevent the social security numbers from coming to the country. It's a contraband of things like drugs and, you know, items that can't pass the border.
I don't understand. I mean, first of all, I'm not sure that you need to show contraband, but why can't you have contraband? Like, so there are cases, you know, I don't know if it's from our circuit, but certainly other circuits that, you know, if you're coming into the country with child pornography that's regarded as contraband, that stuff that we don't want to come into the country, certainly. And I don't know if it's even contraband, but certainly here he's using the information to create fake passports, which certainly is related to control of the border as to whether you're going to generate fake identifications to sneak into the country, right?
Well, Your Honor, we submit that it really doesn't have any bearing on the control of the border. But first,
there's nothing that can be on a cell phone that has any bearing on the control of the border. Is that your position?
Well, no, but that can't be the standard. My position is that after Riley, it can't be. Could anything be on the cell phone that we would like to see in order to pursue criminal charges? That can't be the standard after Riley, because Riley holds that cell phones are a different category of search, that they require much more justification.
Well, they're saying it doesn't fall into the search incident to arrest exception, right?
They say more than that. What Riley changes, it accepts the traditional search incident to arrest standard, but what it changes is the standard for analyzing cell phone searches.
But hasn't the Supreme Court and decisions of this court already set effectively the outer limit for searches at the border? And by the outer limit, I mean body intrusive searches, right? So there, body intrusive searches only require reasonable suspicion. So that what you're asking is that somehow a search of the phone, whether it be manual or forensic, is somehow more intrusive than a body cavity search, which would only require reasonable suspicion, unless you're saying that somehow that is no longer good law after Riley.
No, what I'm saying is that a cell phone search is differently intrusive. It is extremely intrusive, is what the court held in that a cell phone search is not the same as a body search. It's obviously different from that. But it is as intrusive as the search of someone's home. That's what the court held in Riley. And so in order to, now in order to just before Riley, also cell phone searches were thought to be acceptable as part of the exception for the
Well, so can I just ask you about this intrusiveness question, right? So in Ogbaraha, right, we said that you could do a body cavity search that revealed drugs concealed in the suspect's vagina, and that required only reasonable suspicion. You're saying that, like, looking at somebody's camera roll on their cell phone is more intrusive than looking into somebody's genitals?
I'm not saying it's more intrusive. I'm saying it's very, very intrusive in a different way. But those are two very different. The justifications for those are very different. But it's a balance between the justification for it and the intrusiveness. And so the body cavity searches, those are only done when there's strong suspicion, reasonable suspicion of smuggling. It is at the absolute core.
Right. So you're saying that there should be a warrant for the cell phone, though. So if there's reasonable suspicion that there's something on the cell phone, just as there's reasonable suspicion that a body cavity search would turn up something, the idea that the phone is more intrusive than the body cavity search and therefore requires a warrant just seems sort of ridiculous.
Well, it's not that the problem is a body cavity search is searching specifically for contraband, which is at the core of the justification.
Yeah, I kind of don't really understand that about the contraband. So, you know, I mean, haven't we already rejected that? So, like, in United States versus Irving, we said, of the warrant exception context in which the Supreme Court has addressed the issue of pretextual searches, border searches seem most analogous to searches of vessels by customs officials. And in that context, the court noted we would see little logic in sanctioning such examinations of ordinary unsuspect vessels but forbidding them in the case of suspected smugglers. Similarly, in the case of searches at airports, it would make little sense to allow random searches of any incoming passenger without reasonable suspicion, but require reasonable suspicion for searches of passengers that are suspected of criminal activity. For this, we reason that the validity of a border search does not depend on whether it is prompted by a criminal investigative motive. So it seems like we've already adopted a rule. You know, it's kind of like Terry stops. If you have the authority to do the search, the fact that you're really doing it because you are looking for evidence of some other crime that's not exactly the thing that justifies the exception in the first place does not invalidate the authority to search, right? Okay. We've said that already. But, I mean, maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong, but it's our case law.
The court has only said that, though, with respect to ordinary searches. And I'd just like to quote from Riley, distinguishing ordinary searches, searches of other effects other than a cell phone. Riley said,
no, but we said that even in the context of searches that require reasonable suspicion, right? Because in Levy, we say if you reasonably suspect that there's a crime, that Border Patrol reasonably suspects that there's a crime going on, it doesn't shouldn't be blind to that, right? Even if it's not something that's normally within the remit of Customs and Border Protection.
Levy, again, I just can't emphasize enough how Riley completely changed the equation. One side of the equation, the half about the intrusion with respect to cell phones, and said that it's a different category, that modern cell phones as a category privacy concerns far beyond those implicated by the search of things like a cigarette pack, a wallet, or a purse, and also a diary distinguished for the long.
But no circuit has, even the Ninth Circuit in Cano, right, has, while limiting what counts as digital contraband, whatever, you know, whatever they were meaning by that, even there doesn't require a warrant. So you're putting us out. You would ask us to go even further out in terms of the level of protection that a phone gets than Cano, right?
I am, but I have a fallback to Cano. I am stating that even child pornography as contraband should not be a justification for a warrantless search for the reason stated in Smith by Judge Rakoff, which is that it doesn't prevent anything from coming into the country.
The Smith decision doesn't even—I don't believe it even references Levy in that section where it's talking about. It's hard to be dealing with border searches post Riley without even discussing Levy. So I'm not sure how much value that analysis has.
Well, that's because there are two different kinds of border searches, and Riley makes that clear. Two different kinds of searches. Searches of cell phones are a completely different category than searches of other personal effects. Levy is more like the notebook case. The notebook case is more like the diary case distinguished in Riley. Riley distinguished those and said that cell phone searches demand a much higher justification. In other words, they have to be more tightly justified by the reason for the border search. And the border
Riley doesn't talk at all about the border search.
No, but the reason for the search. They're talking about the search incident to arrest, but it's the other half of the equation.
But there are different justifications in a search incident to arrest than there are at the border, right? The border has always been a unique place where the government's interest is at its zenith, right, according to case law. So how does that, you know, incident to arrest is a pretty common thing that happens, right? Arrest, search incident to arrest, whereas the border is in a different sphere, literally.
Well, the reasons that have been given by the Supreme Court to justify the border search, a search of the personal effects of any traveler coming in, are to protect the United States territorial integrity, preventing the unwanted entry of persons and effects, to intercept contraband and prevent smuggling, and to control who and what may enter the border. It's not just to fish around for general crime.
Yeah, but to control who and what may enter the border, like there are some people who enter the border because we don't want people who engage in criminal activity to enter the border, right? We have a pretty elaborate set of laws about grounds for inadmissibility, right? Why somebody should not be able to cross the border. Some of those grounds involve, you know, advocating terrorism or belonging to a totalitarian political party or other things. And you might find evidence on a cell phone that they're engaged in that kind of conduct and therefore are inadmissible. So the idea that, you know, I understand it's kind of reasonable for the Supreme Court to say it's unlikely that there's going to be something on the cell phone that implicates officer safety, you know, in a search incident to arrest. But if the reason why we don't require warrants at the border is because somebody might be inadmissible and the government is entitled to control the entry of unwanted persons into the country, it seems totally to cover the cell phone.
That was not this case because Mr. Osigwe was a lawful permanent resident who has the same rights of attorney as anybody else does. He wasn't somebody who's excludable because they just don't like what's on his phone.
But I just read to you the passage that if the government has the authority to do these routine searches that include the cell phones, the fact that they have a criminal investigative motive for a particular search doesn't invalidate that authority. Right.
From Levy. But what I'm arguing is that
I was quoting from Irving because that's the routine searches. And then, you know, we've also decided this case, Taba, right, where there were those, they were American citizens. They had attended a conference about Islam in Canada, and the Customs and Border Protection detained them for 4 to 6 hours, questioned them about their activities, fingerprinted them, photographed them, kicked their legs apart so they could do a pat-down search, searched their vehicles before letting them back into the country, all without individualized suspicion. And we said that that's part of a routine border search. You're telling me that if you had done a manual search of their cell phone, that would have been less intrusive than the six-hour detention?
No, but they had suspicions of terrorism, and that would arguably...
Well, they had general suspicions of terrorism, but there was no reasonable suspicion that any one of those people was involved in terrorist activity, right?
Your Honor, I'm sorry I'm not familiar with that case, but that kind of intrusion is bad, and it's probably very, very intrusive, maybe as intrusive as cell phone search, but differently so. What Riley talks about is that a cell phone search is really unnecessary for...
It's unnecessary for protecting officer safety in the context of a search incident to arrest.
And for preserving evidence, which is a much broader justification.
Okay, but if the justification for the warrant exception at the border is not about officer safety or preserving evidence, it's about the sovereign's authority. What is it?
It's about the
long-standing right of the sovereign to protect itself by stopping and examining persons and property crossing into this country.
Right, and that is to prevent persons who should not be admitted or goods that should not be admitted. And there was no such reason for this search here. There was no claim that Alasik didn't have, he had a completely valid passport. He was an LPR. He was entitled to enter the country, even if they found
that. All right, so just, so let me just, so just generally. So, like, let's say, you know, there was, they were just doing regular checks to make sure that somebody wasn't inadmissible. So they were checking his phone for evidence of advocacy of terrorism or something as a kind of regular screen. That would be allowed?
No, it wouldn't be allowed.
Okay, so then you're saying it actually doesn't matter that they were looking for a particular crime. You're just saying you shouldn't allow authorities at the border to check phones.
We shouldn't allow authorities at the border without a warrant to scroll through phones. Evidence.
But you just said the whole idea is that the sovereign has the right to keep people who are unwanted from entering the border, and there are grounds of inadmissibility where the evidence on the phone would be relevant, right?
Well, I'm not sure that there are grounds of inadmissibility for someone who's an LPR or for, like, a citizen returning. I don't think that there might
be. Well, a citizen maybe can be rendered inadmissible, but an LPR could be, right?
I think they have the same rights at the border. Returning LPRs, I have some cases on that.
Well, regardless, I mean, just if, in fact, you can have routine searches because you're policing unwanted persons coming into the border, if there is a generally applicable rule that you can look at property in order to see if there's grounds of inadmissibility or contraband and so on, you're saying there should be an exception for people who are have a different immigration status?
No, but what I'm saying
is it's a general exception to the warrant requirement, right? So if you just said that it's okay for people who don't have that immigration status, it means that the purpose of the exception covers this kind of search.
I'm not sure how it applies to people who don't have that status. I do know that they couldn't have. My answer, what I meant to say, was that if they found evidence of crime on Alice Segway's phone, which they were looking for and found, they couldn't have stopped him from entering. It wasn't about his entry. It was about a prosecution that they had going about crimes he was committing in Queens. And under Condo and under Expect and the Fourth Circuit.
Right, so then your argument is even if they're able to do searches at the border, because here they were investigating a particular crime, they shouldn't be allowed to take advantage of that authority.
Right.
So you're saying there's an exception to the warrant exception that should apply when they really have a motive of investigating a particular crime.
Right,
but that is exactly contrary to what we said in Irving, which was that the validity of a border search does not depend on whether it's prompted by a criminal investigative motive. So if generally the search falls within the exception, we do not say that because the investigating authorities have a particular motive of investigating a particular crime, that invalidates the search.
Well, that's what we said in the context of a non-cell phone search. And my argument depends on this court accepting.
But actually, just the way you articulated the argument did not depend on it being a cell phone. You just said, look, they're looking for evidence of a particular crime. Like, you didn't say anything about how the cell phone makes things different. Yeah, just the way you articulated it now. So why is it that your argument, even though you're phrasing it in general terms about the motive of the investigators, it really is just about cell phones?
It is just about cell phones. My argument is about cell phones. It's based on Riley's change of one side of the equation, which is the cell phone search is so intrusive that it must be very specific.
Okay, so in this case, if the U.S. authorities had gotten the same tip from the British authorities that Alice Segway was engaging in identity fraud and so on, and they stopped him at the airport, and he had a briefcase full of lots of documents. They could rifle through all those documents to see whether there's identity fraud going on, right?
That would be closer to leaving. That would be closer to...
Okay, so they could rifle through, they can take out his briefcase, a journal, a notebook, whatever, they could rifle through all of that. But if he keeps the same information on a cell phone, they need to stop and get a warrant.
Exactly.
But why does that make any sense?
Because as Riley held, a cell phone is the repository of one's entire life, and for the government to crack open and start looking through a cell phone is an enormous intrusion. It's much bigger than taking someone's diary if they're carrying a diary from the airport.
It's bigger? Really? I mean, if somebody keeps a diary about their daily activities and all of their private thoughts and so on, you think it would be less intrusive to read their diary than to scroll through you know, their text messages or whatever?
I think, I mean, is your I think part of perhaps what you're saying is aside from issues of motive, it's just whether or not a cell phone search should be considered routine, because that's also, I guess, a factor in deciding how the border exception applies. And so beyond what the motive is for the search, should this type of cell phone search post-Riley be considered routine?
Yeah, well, that's one issue. The government, first of all, Judge Schiaponi did not hold Caulfield that this was a non-routine search. So she didn't even hold that it was routine. She held it was non-routine, and she relied on Levy, which was also a non-routine search. The government is arguing, to the extent that the government's arguing that, no, it's just routine and anybody's cell phone should be looked at, that's really extraordinarily.
I mean, you're saying it's extraordinary, but it's the position of the First Circuit, the Fourth Circuit, the Fifth Circuit, the Seventh Circuit, the Eighth Circuit, the Ninth Circuit, and the Eleventh Circuit, right?
Well, it's not the position of the Ninth Circuit.
And well, the Ninth Circuit does say that a manual search of a cell phone is routine. It just says there it might depend on the motive or what you're looking for. But as a general matter, a manual search of a cell phone is a routine search in all of these circuits. In fact, is there any circuit that says a manual search of a cell phone is a non-routine search?
Matter whether it's called routine or non-routine. The question is whether it can be done without a warrant. Can it be done without a warrant?
Is there any circuit that says that it needs a warrant?
Well, Cano does.
No, it does. It does not.
It says the manual search for anything other than contraband. It's not just a...
No. But let's take digital contraband, right? For digital contraband, the Ninth Circuit says you could do a manual search with reasonable suspicion.
For child pornography. But you can't go beyond that and look for evidence of where it came from or any other evidence of the phone. All the other evidence that they spoke to the phone looking for further evidence of the child pornography offense was suppressed. And that was even in this manual search.
But it doesn't say it needs a warrant. It says that would be non-routine. You need a reasonable suspicion, right? I mean, there's no circuit that says you need a warrant.
No, Conroy does say you need a warrant, except for... If you have reasonable suspicion of contraband on a cell phone, that's the only exception to the warrant.
Okay, but you're just telling me that there's no such thing as contraband on a cell phone, right? But you acknowledge that all the other circuits think that there is, right?
Well, we don't have a child pornography case here, so we don't have to get into that in this case.
But if child pornography is contraband because it's stuff that we don't want coming into the country, why aren't all of the stolen Social Security numbers that are stored on his phone contraband? Child pornography is also evidence, but it's also contraband.
No, but it's not.
The drugs are contraband, but they're also evidence, right, of a drug crime.
They didn't seize it. They got the numbers and wrote them down for later investigation. They didn't seize the numbers. If contraband is something to stop from entering the country, it's goods. Like, for example, if he were carrying a false passport in his pocket, that might be considered contraband because that is the thing itself. This is just evidence of.
Okay. All right, we're going to hear from the amicus, Mr. Wilkins.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I want to return to Riley here because I think that the discussion so far that touched on, for example, body cavity searches, the discussion that touched upon the rulings of other circuits, I think the fundamental issue here is that Riley instructs that when you are conducting an analysis under the Fourth Amendment, the balancing test that would apply under any exception to the warrant requirement, you have to treat cell phones fundamentally differently, and they are intrusive in a different way than a body cavity search. Of course, no one wants to be subjected to
that. You have to treat them differently, but you have to just understand what they are, right?
Absolutely.
And so the analysis in Riley is that it's this nature of cell phones that it probably isn't a threat to officer safety, right?
No, Your Honor. Let me clarify what I mean here. So if you're thinking about the balancing test, and this is what the Riley court did, let's just stick first with the privacy intrusion and how that differs from a body cavity search, for example, before we move on to the other interests. Okay, if we talk about the intrusiveness here, of course, a body cavity search Not a pleasant experience, I'm sure, but it's looking for specific things in the body like drugs, etc. It is not exposing any expressive content. There's no, that when we talk about, which Riley talks about.
I mean, I'm sorry, but we've said that the distinction between a routine and a non-routine search is about searches of property versus searches of the body, and we do think that exposing a person's genitals is a greater intrusion on privacy and dignity than a search of property. So you're telling me that that's not true, that what we said about that is not right, that in fact a search of a cell phone is more intrusive than searching somebody's genitals?
Look, the court's never, this court and the Supreme, this court's never addressed that question. Never addressed the question.
We have addressed that question. You're just saying that those cases are abrogated by Riley.
No, Your Honor, I don't think this court has ever compared an electronic device search and the intrusiveness of it, the privacy interests on it, particularly under the First Amendment and the expressive interests, that's never been compared to a body cavity search.
Okay, so the expressive, I mean, you're talking about expressive interests now. I mean, a cell phone isn't necessarily, so, you know, I just talked about this Taba case, right? Where that's the case where we did confront a First Amendment interest because the border authorities were targeting people who had attended a religious conference in Canada, and we actually said in that case that that was a substantial burden on their First Amendment rights. We just thought it was justified by the authority to police the border. But there, you have people who go to a particular religious conference. They're detained for 6 hours. They're subject to questioning about their activities, pat frisks, kicking their legs apart to open up their legs to do the frisk, and then thorough searches of their vehicles, you know, during that 6 hour detention. You're telling me that that is less intrusive than looking at somebody's cell phone and implicates expressive conduct less?
Well, Your Honor, I do think it's different. And I think, again,
I know it's different. I mean, it seems to me I'd rather somebody scroll through my cell phone than do that to me. So that's how I think it's different. So I'm asking why I should think the cell phone is more serious.
Riley, when we first emphasized, is a unanimous decision of the Supreme Court. And every justice acknowledged that you cannot apply for analog era constitutional principles in the context of this new technology. And that was 2014. We're now 11 years later. Cell phones have gotten even more, a lot more storage. The quality and quantity, if that—
I mean, you're emphasizing the unanimity of Riley, but, you know, it is also the unanimous position of all of the circuit courts that you do not need a warrant to do a cell phone search at the border, right?
Actually, Your Honor, I think if you look at cases like Toussaint out of the 11th Circuit, you look at Levy out of the 7th Circuit, Toussaint out of the 11th Circuit, Xiang out of the 8th Circuit, these cases do not take Riley seriously. They simply say, they maybe spend a sentence or two on it, they just say the border is different. They don't actually engage in the analysis that Riley requires, and I think
Toussaint actually does go pretty in-depth into it. They say Riley is about the logic of the search incident to arrest exception, but in the context of the border, we and all the other circuits, you know, so the 11th Circuit has done this, but 2nd Circuit has done it too, have said a routine search is about searches of property. The Supreme Court has, you know, maybe it's not said that so directly, but has indicated that. That the distinction is between property and searches of the person, and a cell phone is property, and there's no reason why Riley abrogates all of those cases, right?
Your Honor, I think your description just now of the Toussaint case indicates exactly what I was talking about earlier, which is the failure to analyze the privacy intrusiveness of the part of the Malus test. What Your Honor described was immediately going to the government interest, that it's a different border exception. But I think if courts are faithful to the Supreme Court, went out of its way, spent paragraph after paragraph talking about the intrusiveness of a cell phone search, and indeed said that the government, that a search of a cell phone, and by the way, Riley involved manual searches only. In fact, one of the phones was a flip phone, very different from the phones that we have now. And the court said those manual searches, that a government search of that kind of phone would expose more to the government than in someone's home. And so I think that the government's position.
Yeah, one point that's made in a two-cent Tousett and also in the Fifth Circuit case on this is that actually they've said that you can have a search of a home pursuant to the border exception. I mean, we don't, I guess, you know, in our circuit, we don't have homes at the border, so maybe we don't, haven't confronted that question. But are you saying that those cases are wrong?
Well, I think those cases are wrong. They don't actually, so let me say for a moment as an example, the First Circuit.
Okay, so fine. So maybe you think all the circuits are wrong, but do you agree with what Ms. Cassidy said, which is that if they were doing a search of Mr. Al-Sigwe had a briefcase and they rifled through all of his documents, or he had a personal diary and they read it, that would be fine, but the cell phone would be different?
I think the cell phone is fundamentally different, Your Honor. I think
it's weird to me that you're talking about the First Amendment in that context, because, you know, you're saying if there is a journalist and they take out his reporter's notebook, or there's a photojournalist and they like look at the film on his camera, you're saying, well, that's just property. But a phone implicates expressive interest in a unique way. But of course, the average search of a cell phone is not going to be about expressive interest. It's going to be about this kind of thing, that there might be criminal evidence of a crime on the phone. And so isn't your rule just kind of dramatically, it's over-inclusive because it includes all of these permissible searches of cell phones that don't implicate expressive activity? It's under-inclusive because if they even target, you know, a reporter's notebook or something that clearly is about expressive activity, you're saying that is fine and you wouldn't need a warrant for it.
Well, Your Honor, so I'll address both sides of that. First, I think whether it's every or the vast majority of searches of cell phones do involve expressive content. And if you look at, for example, the Sultana decision by Judge Morrison, she explains why there's no distinction between a sort of a manual and a forensic, and that, of course, some of these searches take hours. The agents can look at as much on the phone as they want to. So they're not just scrolling through and I'll stop at one photo or the other. They're literally rummaging through a phone. The authority the government's claiming is enormous. And we have to remember—
I'm sorry, that doesn't answer the question of the difference if I jot down my notes in a note function on the phone versus if I come— if, you know, I still like using Moleskins, right? So I jot down a lot on Moleskins. What's the difference?
Yeah, Your Honor. So the documents in the briefcase, the Moleskin diary, certainly implicate expressive material. But I think so that, you know, in that sense, the quality of the expressive material, which the Supreme Court talks about, is similar. But in Riley, the court emphasized two things. The quality, which I think here is even different from what would be in a Moleskin or a briefcase, is the different types of information on a phone, and the court lists them out in great detail. But then there's the issue of quantity.
So, for example, if I come through with a digital camera, I don't use a phone, I use a digital camera, how would you distinguish that? So if I'm at the border, I don't even have a phone, but I have a digital camera. Is that different? Can they scroll through the digital camera? What if I come through with an old microcassette recorder and don't have a phone where I would have recorded notes? Is that different? Is it the fact that the phone aggregates all these other functions that makes it so unique at the border?
Well, Your Honor, those certainly raise concerns, but I think, again, and I know we've said the word Riley about a million times, but if you look at the, you know, there are sentences with 20 different examples the justices give of all the different kinds of things that are on a phone. There really is not another device like a phone or a laptop or a tablet, and that's what we're talking about here. And I just want to spend one second, the Al-Assad case out of the First Circuit, the court there rejected the warrant requirement, but if you look at that case, the court relied entirely, or largely, on a pre-Riley case where the court said, in that earlier case, that it was about a laptop. And it said basically the laptop isn't any different than physical objects. And that is an argument that the court expressly rejected. The government made that argument in Riley. And the court said, you know, that was like comparing, I think it was like a ride on a horseback to a journey to the moon. Those were the court's words. And so, it really is extraordinary what the court said in Riley, and I think it would be.
I guess there's two ways to think about whether Riley affected it. So you could say, well, we've previously said that the key distinction is between searches of property or searches of the person, and since Riley is in a different context, we don't have to reconsider that. Okay, but you're saying, well, you should take account of what the Supreme Court says about how cell phones are somewhat different, right? So if we do a kind of qualitative difference, right, so we say, okay, we've generally said searches of property are routine and searches of the person are non-routine, but let's take account of the nature of a cell phone. Maybe it's a different kind of property that doesn't implicate the reasons for the border exception, right? So if the way I think about that, as I've suggested, is it's true that the nature of the cell phone is it doesn't implicate the interests at stake in the search incident to arrest exception because it doesn't implicate officer safety, but it could indicate that the person is somebody who shouldn't be entering the country or they could be carrying material that shouldn't enter the country. It seems to me it does fall within the nature of the border exception. So if I've taken account of the idea that I should look closely at the nature of cell phones, why isn't that correct?
Yeah, Your Honor, I wanted to come to that next, which is the government interest side of balancing here. I do think that the interests here are narrower than Your Honor just posited, which is that it's unwanted. I mean, the words the court uses is like unwanted persons or things. And certainly when it comes to things, there the court is talking about contraband. That's not really at issue here. But also,
but why isn't it an issue here? So if the guy has a bunch of files that he's using to do identity fraud and to create fraudulent passports, why isn't that the same thing as a bunch of documents that would be identity theft documents that you wouldn't want him to come into the country with?
Pardon me, Your Honor. I think the difference is this. When you talk about this, the only the courts that have tried to think about contraband in this context, including, I think, Levy, that the only thing that's been identified so far as falling within that is like a digital image or a video of child pornography, because that is the thing itself. That is the crime, that is the unlawful object. It happens to be in digital form on the phone. Now, Your Honor mentioned...
But it might not be on the phone. It might be on the cloud, and it's just you see it on the phone because that's a way to access the cloud. But looking on the phone indicates that this is a person who has that material. I guess there's a copy of it on our phone, perhaps, but like that's why you want to be able to search for it. So if this guy has a bunch of fraudulent identity documents or stolen identity documents, why isn't that a similar thing?
Well, Your Honor, first, I believe that the government policy requires that sort of the Wi-Fi be turned off when the phone is searched at the border. So I don't think it's the case that that image somehow isn't resident on the phone. But, the idea that sort of social security numbers themselves in a document on a phone, I mean, that is not, that may be evidence of a crime, but it's not the crime itself. The possession of an image or video of child pornography is the crime itself. And that's why the courts have said, this is the only thing that's been identified so far. They haven't come up with anything else that includes the Seventh Circuit. And so—
But can I interrupt you there? This notion of digital contraband, That really is just a Canoe principle. I haven't. Are there other cases that limit to that extent? Just because, for example, in the Fourth Circuit, the Ijbakan case, just because they say that it has to have a nexus to national security or collecting duties, that doesn't mean like there could be evidence that is not in and of itself contraband that goes to the issue of a national security nexus. So it doesn't have to be contraband what is being looked at on the phone.
Well, it's interesting. There are some circuits that have used broader language like that. However, I believe every circuit to have addressed the question actually has been addressing something that would fall within the notion of contraband.
I don't think the 11th Circuit, right? I mean, I think that's probably, I think it's probably fair to say that that's the broadest, no reasonable suspicion for anything at the border.
What I meant to say was the articulation of, even if the articulation of the government interests are quite broad, what the court actually, the actual alleged crime there in these cases falls within the narrower definition of the exception, of the purposes underlying the exception that the Ninth Circuit gave in Kano. So even though you have broader language in some of these cases, what they actually looked at would fall within a narrower definition of the purpose of the forest search. And let me also just emphasize that, I mean, we're talking about, you know, millions of people entering this country. I don't know how many come in at JFK a day, but all of these people face an enormous chilling effect on their expressive abilities because they know there's a risk that their cell phone will
be searched. That's true. I mean, so if in fact, you know, we had a case where, let's say there's a journalist passing through an airport and, you know, some border official got wind of that happening and doesn't like that person and so decides to rifle through all of his things and maybe takes his reporter's notebook and reads it and makes fun of him or whatever, and it's clear that he's a target of the search because of expressive activity. You'd be in here saying that that is a violation of the First Amendment, right? Because it's targeting expressive activity, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So why isn't that the solution to the First Amendment question? That if there is a targeting of expressive activity, that makes the search invalid, and that's the way normally the First Amendment works. But the idea that in most applications, a cell phone search is not targeting expressive activity, but only might incidentally get it, doesn't mean that we do a kind of facial blanket warrant requirement.
Well, Your Honor, I mean, I think that the burden on expressiveness applies across the board. And that's why in looking at this question of the border search exception, you know, and you're looking at sort of a type of search, which is, you know, the electronic device search, and whether that as a large category falls within the border search exception, and that's the government's position. And what we're saying is that burden on expressive activity of every single traveler, every journalist, is enormous and cannot possibly be outweighed by the weak connection to the government interest at stake.
You were talking about the government interest narrowly in terms of contraband, but you acknowledge that the way the Supreme Court has articulated it, it's about persons or property. And we do have a large list of grounds of inadmissibility of a person to come into the country. And some of that might be evidence that's on the phone, like advocacy for terrorism or membership in an authoritarian political party or so on. You might see propaganda on the phone that shows inadmissibility. So why wouldn't that be relevant for somebody just doing routine searches at the border?
Non-citizens, you know, are not an issue in this case. That very well may.
Well, he is not a citizen.
Well, sorry. He's an LPR, so I think that takes him well within the constitutional protections that would apply to a citizen. I mean, Your Honor just mentioned,
Can he be denied citizenship if he does something that renders him inadmissible or deportable?
Well, I mean, Your Honor, I think if he has the required documentation to show that he's a legal permanent resident, he should be entitled to enter, just like a U.S. citizen who shows a passport. It's not as though even for a U.S. citizen, you could say,
I'm not sure that's right, but I'm just talking about the logic of the border exception. So, like, let's say that it's somebody that we would agree may be inadmissible. It's going to be part of the routine practice of border authorities to determine whether the person is inadmissible, right? And that might implicate whether they have terrorist propaganda on their phone or something like that.
Well, I guess I'm trying to figure out sort of the circumstances in which that might arise. Because, you know, we're talking here, and the government is talking here, about literally being able to search without suspicion the cell phone of anybody who crosses the border. That's an incredibly broad and invasive power. And so the idea...
Yeah, but you acknowledge that it's broad and invasive, right? Because it's not like everybody is bringing contraband in, and yet you don't dispute that the government has the authority, without a warrant and without reasonable suspicion, to open up the luggage of anybody coming into the country and just rifle through everything and look through everything, right? Or a vehicle crossing the border, the government can stop the vehicle, do a thorough search of it. Supreme Court has even said you could dismantle the vehicle and, like, look inside and so on, right? That, you know, I think you'd agree, seems intrusive. And yet that falls within the border exception. So... So, like, the idea is not that this is intrusive. The idea would have to be this is something that's qualitatively different from all that.
And that's what we've, that's, you know, that's what the Supreme Court really.
And your argument for why it's different is because, well, there could be contraband hidden in the fuel tank of the vehicle, but there can't be on the phone?
No, not at all, Your Honor. The distinction, the court, you know, was well aware of the search of a camper van, wherever it might be at the border. The distinction here is literally the vast quantity of information on the phone and this is crucial to the expressive interest, the quality of the information. And it's not just the privacy interest of the person who happens to have the phone with them. It's all of the people they interact with who don't think that the government's going to go rifling through all their communications with their friends, their family, etc. The privacy the burdens are truly extraordinary, and I think that the government is very quick to just minimize that and say the border is different. But the Supreme Court has always required in every single exception to the warrant requirement that the question of, you know, when a category, when a type of item is argued to fall within an exception, there's this critical balancing test, and the government interests have to be carefully looked at.
And does it matter? Like, so for example, in Judge Menasche's example of rifling through the suitcase, if in a pocket of that suitcase the customs agents found 8 cell phones, there was the one on his person and 8 other cell phones in, does that, so all of a sudden those 9 phones would come under this when it's obvious that most people don't walk around with 9 cell phones? So how would that, I know maybe it's a far-fetched hypothetical, but we're trying to come up with a rule, right? What would that say?
You know, Your Honor, this may be my response here. I might not quite answer it, but I think that, you know, in that situation, they may very, very well be able to get a warrant. And I think
no, I'm not. But I'm not. We're the question is not whether they can get a warrant. If they had a warrant, it wouldn't be an issue, right? But that you wouldn't be raising the issue. I'm just saying, an agent at the border comes upon 8 phones in your suitcase. Is that a different situation than just someone coming through with their one cell phone?
It very well may be, Your Honor, but I think the key point is that example, it just cannot possibly justify the unfettered search of the phone of every single person crossing the border.
No, but I'm just asking you about that one person.
I understand that, and I'm saying, like, that may, in that situation, that could potentially justify looking at those.
So you're saying that the phone in and of itself isn't what's sacrosanct, because those are 8 phones. Why are they qualitatively any different than the one that was maybe in his breast pocket?
Well, and this goes to the warrant, the warrant point, Your Honor. I guess what I'm saying is that the question is whether those 8 phones give rise to the types of concerns that, when explained to a neutral arbiter, would justify obtaining a warrant.
But you're assuming that there's a need for a warrant. I'm saying, from the border search perspective, isn't that a different situation, but nevertheless involves phones?
I mean, the fact that there are 8 phones does not, I don't think that would justify necessarily rifling through what's on them. If the notion that, that there are 8 phones, I'm not sure what kind of crime or suspicion the officer, the agent might have, but I don't think, you know, they could be entirely legitimate. So, you know, I think that, one thing I want to emphasize, and the court did this in Riley, is that imposing a warrant requirement isn't really asking all that much, because getting one has become so much more efficient, they can be gotten rather quickly. And so it's not asking that much.
Right, but you just talked about the millions of people coming through across the border. In Riley, you have one individual being arrested. You can call the magistrate judge and try to get a warrant, right? But now you've got your million people coming through JFK. Are they all just waiting for the phone call for the warrant?
I mean, they're not. I mean, for various reasons, they can't all be stopped. The government doesn't have that kind of manpower. But I think more importantly here, and I think I forget which one of you made the point that arrests happen all the time. So if that can be done in the context of a search incident to arrest, it can certainly be done in the case of a person crossing the border. And also, I should say, I mean, discussed in our amicus brief, we have a lot of evidence from FOIA requests and otherwise of, you know, keeping people for hours, asking them incredibly intrusive questions based on what is found on their phone. And so if you're going to keep someone for hours, 15 minutes to get a warrant isn't really adding that much time to either the traveler or to the agent who's doing the search. And you know, the Supreme Court made a second point, which is that, of course, if another exception to the warrant requirement applies, that can be used, like the exigent circumstances exception. So imposing a warrant requirement here, number one, it's not really that big of a burden on the government. And number two, that if there are cases where, you know, there are exigent circumstances, they can't wait for the hour or 15 minutes or whatever it is, they may be able to use that exception. And it's, you know, so I...
Okay, I think we have that argument. We'll hear from you again for a minute, but let's turn to the government. Mr. Leidenberg.
May it please the court. I'm Jim Leidenberg. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Southern District of New York, and I represent the United States in this appeal. Even after Riley, the courts of appeals have uniformly held that a manual search of an electronic device at the border does not require individualized suspicion. No circuit has held otherwise. No circuit has ever required reasonable suspicion.
Have all the circuits, though, addressed that specific question? Because isn't the Fourth Circuit the... referred, I guess, to forensic searches requiring some type of individualized suspicion, but they didn't specifically rule on, I don't think, that what manual searches do or do not require?
That's correct. There is a split in the circuits as to whether a more invasive forensic search requires reasonable suspicion, but on the question of whether a brief manual search like the one conducted here requires reasonable suspicion, every circuit that has considered the question, which is five circuits, have all come out the same way. They all said no individualized suspicion is required. Certainly no circuit has said that a warrant is required. And neither the Supreme Court nor this court has ever found that a search of property as opposed to a search of the body is a non-routine search.
Well, those circuits that say a manual search is routine and you don't need reasonable suspicion, but if it's not about contraband, you would need reasonable suspicion. I guess they have kind of said that a search of property requires reasonable suspicion, right?
So the Ninth Circuit has limited the scope of the border search exception to contraband. That is not the law of the circuit under Levy, as I'll come back to in a moment. But as to this precise question, in Kano, the court said, and I quote, manual searches of cell phones at the border are reasonable without individualized suspicion. So as to that question, whether a manual search requires individualized suspicion, the courts are uniform, it does not. Now let's talk about Levy, because that's been talked about a lot. Levy is completely preclusive of that contraband rule from Kano. In Levy, the government admitted that this was a pretextual search. That's at A254 of the appendix in Levy. It was pointed out to the court in appellant's brief that this was a pretextual search, and it was for securities fraud. It had nothing to do with contraband. Levy was post-Riley. In appellant's brief, Riley was cited to the circuit. The circuit well knew about Riley. And the circuit said, not only is there no problem with this sort of pretextual search, with this sort of coordination between different agencies, it said it's commendable. That's exactly what they should be doing. So there it was very far afield from what Kano says is the core of the border search authority. It was for securities fraud.
And is in Levy, is it a routine search, or is it one where they have reasonable suspicion because they thought that there was a crime going on?
So this is page 17 of the reply brief claims wrongly that Levy and Irving, in both of those cases, this court determined those to be non-routine searches. That is not true. What the court said in both cases was, here there was obviously reasonable suspicion, so we don't have to decide whether it was routine or non-routine. But what the court went on to say in Levy, I think notably, post-Riley, was, and this is in footnote 3, like the Supreme Court, we have suggested that the label non-routine should generally be reserved for intrusive searches of the person, such as body cavity searches or strip searches, not belongings. And Tussaud explained why there's good reason for that conclusion. A search of the body, like as Judge Menasche, as you noted, in U.S. v. Oberaha, you know, this was a search of inside a woman's genitals. This is wildly more invasive than a brief manual search of someone's cell phone. And that's the type of search that has been labeled non-routine. That's a search where you're making physical contact with someone.
I mean, I share your intuition that going into my genitals would be more invasive than looking at my cell phone, but opposing counsel suggests otherwise. So did the Supreme Court in Riley say that actually cell phones are, you know, a window into the soul or something that makes it more invasive than reaching into somebody's genitals?
No. Riley didn't say anything about comparing.
Right, although, I mean, certainly to the comparison of a strip search to a search of someone's cell phone, I mean, they're very different types of searches. And so it's not a question of, is a search of a cell phone as violative or intrusive as a strip search? It's, frankly, just a very different category. The question is it intrusive to a level that the Supreme Court has recognized that we shouldn't treat it like going through somebody's purse or going through someone's wallet or going through someone's luggage? And I think that's more the question, is that hasn't the court recognized, you know, it didn't compare it to strip searches, but it did say this is an extraordinarily potentially deep dive into someone's privacy. And so that still matters. Is it the most egregious type of violation? Does it compare to a strip search? Perhaps not, but that doesn't answer the question of whether or not we should label it routine or otherwise give it special consideration, does it?
Riley certainly said that a search of someone's cell phone is invasive, and we don't deny that. But the question here is whether under the border search exception, it falls under the precedent for routine or non-routine. Every circuit to have considered that question has found for a brief manual search like the one conducted here that it falls into the bucket of routine. And that's for good
reason. So certainly if we adhere to the idea that a search of property is routine and a search of the person is not routine. Obviously, a phone is not the person, it's property. So it would fall into the routine category. But does Riley require us to at least think about whether a cell phone is a special kind of property that might be treated differently?
Certainly, Riley says that this court should consider, obviously, a search of a cell phone to be something that is intrusive. But it goes far from compelling any sort of conclusion here, because as multiple members of the court have pointed out, the rationale for the search incident to arrest exception is very narrow. It's strictly, as the court held, to protect police and to prevent destruction of evidence. As the court recognized in Levy, and in every other case that's decided border searches.
Right, but don't we, I mean, that comparison to the what motivates the search incident to arrest, it's like you're just considering half of the balance. You're considering the government interest in a search incident to arrest. The court is saying, well, it doesn't fully apply with the cell phone because it's not a weapon. You can seize a cell phone. There's not that fear of destruction of evidence. That's government motivation rationale for the search. And the court compared that to, in exchange for that, there's this thing that you can look into and find out way more than is relevant to the case. There can always be evidence of a crime found. And so in looking at the border exception, yes, we're talking about, you know, security and keeping out contraband, what have you, but then you still have to balance that with the nature of the intrusion. And so it's not just a question of can intrusion still serve government purposes. We balance those purposes against the level of intrusion, right?
You absolutely do. So one side of the equation is that the scope and rationale for the border search exception is much broader. But yes, on the other side, you also balance that against the invasion of privacy. And the Supreme Court and this court have held over and over again that there is a reduced expectation of privacy at the border, that the border is different than the interior. And that's why extremely invasive searches, like the one conducted in Tava, as Judge Menasche noted, where the people were attending a conference, were held for 4 to 6 hours, detained, fingerprinted, photographed, forcibly had their legs separated. That was a routine search. That's not something that you would normally be subject to in the interior. During a routine search of your baggage, an agent could look through your underwear, read your diary, look at medication that would reveal you have a mental health issue or HIV, look at your birth control. There's all kinds of invasive things that can happen at the border. And let me just make one point about sort of routine, non-routine. Routine is a bit of a misnomer, as this were explained in TAVA. The question is not how ordinary is this. Plenty of things like a 4 to 6 hour detention of people because they attended a conference is not something that ordinarily happens when you go over the border. The question, as explained in TAVA, is not how ordinary or commonplace a search is, but rather the level of intrusion into a person's privacy. And when you look at the two categories that historically have existed, which is things like searching a woman's genitals versus searching property, a brief manual search falls much more into the category of searches like a person's diary and their medication and their underwear than it does into a search of someone's genitals.
You're saying a brief manual search. I mean, does the brevity of the search matter?
The court doesn't have to decide where sort of the outer limit is. You know, there's been a suggestion that an agent could effectively turn a manual search into a forensic search by spending, you know, 24 hours looking at the phone. That's not what happened here. Here the record shows that the search was at least under 50 minutes, probably much shorter. And so the court, for these purposes, only has to decide, as has every other circuit that's considered this question.
I guess if we don't think there's something special about the phone, you know, we did say in TAPA that a detention of 6 hours would be routine, and the Supreme Court said in the case about the person smuggling drugs that a 12-hour detention of a person might not be routine. And so, you know, I guess that gives us some guidance about the length of a kind of detention.
Yeah, TAPA engaged in sort of that analysis. I think in Montoya, which was where...
Montoya. Right.
Yeah, Montoya, where I think it was about a 16-hour detention.
That was overnight, right? They kept the person overnight.
They kept the person overnight and said, basically, we're going to wait until you have a bowel movement. And by the way, you can't use the toilet. You have to use a garbage basket because we're going to observe that. That was found to be a non-routine search.
It does seem like that should require reasonable suspicion, right?
And that is what the Supreme Court found. But this is nothing like that. And so the sort of brief manual search conducted here should, like the brief manual searches conducted in the cases considered by all the other circuits, should not give rise to any need for individualized suspicion.
What about the idea that, you know, yeah, you can rifle through somebody's diary and all of their belongings and the luggage and so on, but if you're just kind of browsing a phone, you've got their messages and their photographs and all sorts of information about them, and you're going to come across a lot more personal information than any kind of physical property. Is that true?
It may be the case that a search of a cell phone is, you know, somewhat more intrusive than a search of a diary, but certainly in terms of the two categories where you have, you know, searches of diaries and prescriptions and underwear on one side, and you've got extremely invasive bodily searches where there's physical contact on the other.
You think that a search of a diary is just somewhat more intrusive than a search of a cell phone? Is that what you said?
I acknowledge that a search of a cell phone may be somewhat more intrusive than a search of a diary.
Just somewhat. Just somewhat more intrusive. Searching someone's cell phone that has potentially access to their bank records, what they've searched on the internet, all their friends, their text messages, what news sites they look at. That's just somewhat more intrusive than searching someone's diary.
Than searching the combination of someone's diary, prescription medication, underwear. They're actually, if they had a briefcase, their bank records, their social security number, all kinds of very sensitive things that have been deemed.
Yeah, I mean, if I kept a diary that included my account of my innermost thoughts about what I'm thinking about, everything that's going on in my life every day, and they get to read that, that does seem more intrusive than whatever you could get from a manual search of a cell phone, like the text messages that say, let's have lunch, you know, tomorrow or whatever.
Frankly, it's hard to imagine something more intrusive for somebody else to read than a diary. Unless there are further questions.
Can I just ask one final question? So your view in terms of what's required for a manual search is that it's not no probable cause, no reasonable suspicion, no individualized suspicion at all. Is that your position?
Yes, that's our position and what every circuit to have considered the question itself.
And that's just your position with regard to, and I know that's all that's at issue in this case, is manual searches.
Yes, this court may not reach the question of forensic searches. That question is before the court in another case, U.S. v. Jatique Smith, which is 24-16-80, but it's not before the court here.
Wait, well, sorry. The question about a forensic search is before us in the other case?
Correct. But that case...
Okay, so...
That case is still being briefed.
Okay, so I guess...
Not yet.
Oh, I see. Okay, fine. So I guess your position would be that the interest is not limited to contraband or digital contraband, but if we thought that that was a meaningful concept, does this case involve digital contraband?
Yes, Your Honor. The stolen Social Security numbers of other people stored on a phone is absolutely digital contraband. And the searcher also had a clear nexus to the border.
And why is it digital contraband? I mean, you know, opposing counsel keeps pointing out that, you know, they didn't seize the numbers. It's just evidence of him stealing the Social Security numbers. It's not like an actual piece of material that's being stuck into the country.
But they may well have had the right to seize it, but the fact that they didn't, makes this less intrusive. It doesn't make it more intrusive. And yes, stealing someone's Social Security numbers and keeping them on your phone is plainly contraband and plainly something that CBP...
That's contraband because an individual is not allowed to have that in his or her possession. And so it is something that you could seize or delete from the phone or whatever if you detect it at the border.
It is stolen goods. Which is exactly what CBP is there to prevent.
And is the interest at the border, is it just about preventing contraband from entering the country?
No, Your Honor, and the court held otherwise in Lee. This argument that the border search authority is limited to contraband was before the court in Lee, a post-Riley case. That exact argument was presented to the court, and the court rejected it. The court said, no, there's a much broader interest in the border search. And the court held there.
Well, Levy kind of says, you know, regardless of what the origin of the border search exception is, border agents shouldn't be blind to other criminal activity they see is going on, right? So I guess I'm asking, what's the original justification for having the border search exception? Is it about preventing contraband from entering the country, or is it something broader than that?
Something more than that. It's about preventing crime at international borders. And CBP and border agents absolutely have a strong interest in doing that. And that's why the court...
And does the crime have to be something about border crossing?
No, Your Honor. In Levy, the crime was securities fraud. It didn't have anything to do with border crossing. The appellant argued it should be limited to contraband and that you shouldn't be able to use these sort of pretexts. The appellant said this will give rise to this parade of horribles. And the court rejected it. And the court said, actually, collaboration is to be commended, not condemned. It said, we note that DEA and FBI agents frequently assist customs officials in the execution of border searches. And this court, in the face of this exact...
But part of the reason for that cooperation is because, for whatever reason, there is a exception to the warrant requirement at the border. And so if the government thinks that there's a criminal coming in, they can take advantage of the authority they have at the border to do the search. I guess I'm asking, why do we originally have that exception? Is it just because of contraband? I mean, the way the Supreme Court has articulated it is prevent people or goods from entering the country. So maybe it is about, you know, people, particular kinds of people we don't want entering the country.
It's absolutely about that, too. It's about preventing unwanted people from entering the country, about preventing unwanted goods. It goes way beyond contraband and goes to the interest in who is here, what they're doing here.
Right, so we have all of these laws about grounds of inadmissibility, and a lot of that depends on whether you've committed a prior crime or whether you engage in terrorism or belong to a violent political party and things like that. Does that mean that you're able, that the border officials are able to search for those kinds of evidence of that kind of inadmissibility?
Yes, Your Honor. And actually here...
And that would be First Amendment protected generally, right? I mean, if you, you know, advocate for terrorism, like generally that is First Amendment protected speech, but it is also a ground of inadmissibility. So it does mean that, you know, the First Amendment, unless that's an unconstitutional law, the First Amendment applies in a kind of different way at the border than it does generally, right?
Yes, that's exactly right, Your Honor. And actually in Al-Assad, the First Circuit explained why imposing some sort of higher restriction on expressive material is totally unworkable. It would protect terrorist communications, which are inherently expressive. It would create a totally unworkable standard where government agents on their feet are supposed to decide, well, is this expressive material, is this not expressive material, and it would contravene Supreme Court precedent about government action being subject to different scrutiny.
Now, it came up in the colloquy with opposing counsel that maybe the rules are different for citizens and non-citizens. Is that a distinction that might be, like, maybe citizens have the full panoply of First Amendment protection, but non-citizens do not when you're talking about border searches? Is that a viable approach?
It's not something I've looked into closely, and I don't think the court needs to decide it here. I think what's notable there is that Al Sigway was not just suspected and using a fraudulent passport with a U.S. non-immigrant visa. He had a pending citizenship application. So, of course, CBP has a strong interest in this case in knowing whether this person, who they're currently deciding, who Citizenship Services is currently deciding to admit as a citizen into this country, is engaged in criminal activity.
Right, because that could be a ground of denying citizenship.
Absolutely.
And other grounds of inadmissibility might also be a ground of denying citizenship in other cases.
Yes, Your Honor.
So how would you deal with the argument that Mr. Wilkins makes about the expressive, you know, the burden on expressive activity that might be implicated if you can search phones at the border?
So if there are specific cases, you know, where a journalist is targeted or somebody is targeted for this reason, there are other mechanisms to deal with that. There are Bivens actions. There are appeals to Congress. There are, frankly, the types of lawsuits that were filed in Al-Assad and in Taba. Those mechanisms exist. I'll say it wasn't a journalist. So this concern about journalism, journalists being targeted, they're just not presented here. And frankly, the First Amendment argument presented by the media is not before the court. It was not presented below. It was not briefed below. And an amicus can't present an argument that hasn't been raised by the appellant. So that's just not before the court.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Leitenberg. We'll turn to Ms. Cassidy on rebuttal.
Just responding to the last point, Mr. Al Sigway was not using that passport that was seized by the UK. There was no evidence that he was using it at all. It was seized somewhere by the UK authorities, and it was only linked up to him through facial recognition. So that's just not a big fact. And then addressing some of the points counsel made, Cano clearly holds that except for a brief an initial search for digital contraband, there's CP, child pornography, a warrant is required for a mandated search. At page 1019, they say, first, border officials are limited to searching for contraband only. They may not search in a manner untethered to the search for contraband. So, that would also mean that the validity of the manual searches at their inception was beyond dispute when they were looking for contraband. However, a second search, manual search, was conducted. And he did more than thumb through the phone, the agent, consistent with the search for contraband. He also recorded phone numbers, found photographs, messages, etc., that have no connection to the digital contraband. To the extent...
Yes, no, I mean, I think we acknowledge that the Ninth Circuit has this rule that it has to be limited to contraband.
Right.
It does seem like they're the only... What?
They require a warrant, otherwise. There has to be a warrant. Phone of it. So that I just wanted to clarify that because the opposite was said. Levy again did not address the cell phone search. There was no reason on earth for the court to cite Riley because it didn't involve a cell phone search, and Riley's all about cell phones.
But Riley does stand, I mean, sorry, Levy does stand for the proposition that there isn't a limitation to the kinds of crimes that are routinely investigated at the border, right?
And for a search of ordinary effects, doesn't address the cell phone.
Okay.
All right.
You may make one final point.
Okay. Well, and this is what Riley said exactly about the diary. The diary issue that was raised by several of you. According to one poll, nearly 3/4 of smartphone users report being within 5 feet of their phones most of the time, with 12% saying they even use them in the shower. A decade ago, police officers searching an arrest scene may have occasionally stumbled across a highly personal item such as a diary. And they cite a Second Circuit case from 1967, Frankenberg, that upheld that look through a diary. But those discoveries were likely to be few and far between. Today, by contrast, it is no exaggeration to say that many of the more than 90% of American adults who own a cell phone keep on their person a digital record of nearly every aspect of their lives, from the mundane to the intimate. Allowing the police to scrutinize such records on a routine basis is quite different from allowing them to search a personal item or two in the occasional case.
Okay, I think we have that argument. Thank you very much, Ms. Cassidy. We'll hear from Mr. Wilkins for a minute as well.
Thank you. Your Honor, I'll keep this quite brief. So the last argument that counsel of the government made was that somehow the First Amendment is not before the court. That is not correct. We argued in the amicus brief that the First Amendment is relevant in two respects. There's an independent First Amendment claim, and that was not argued before the district court, and so that may well be improperly before this court. However, it is relevant to the Fourth Amendment analysis, and Riley itself talks extensively about the expressive interests at stake. So the notion that this court can't take the First Amendment interests of travelers and journalists into account in this case is just simply incorrect. Secondly,
because part of the reason why the argument is that the search of a cell phone is more intrusive is because of the expressive quality of the cell phone. But that becomes the Fourth Amendment argument, and the sort of First Amendment values kind of inform how we should think about it.
As we point out in our briefing, the Supreme Court's words kind of repeatedly is, you know, scrupulous exactitude has to be applied when looking at the Fourth Amendment when there is expressive material at stake. Secondly, just briefly on Levy, number one, as been said, did not involve a cell phone. It doesn't matter that Riley was cited by in one of the briefs. There was no reason to, really. But secondly, and I think Your Honor mentioned this, Judge Menasche, that in that case, the defendant was returning to the country to face criminal charges. And so I think, as Judge Garoff has pointed out in the Fox case, which we cited in our brief, that Levy on those facts cannot possibly stand for the proposition that you can search a cell phone for anything whenever a traveler crosses the border. The last point I want to make is again, returning to Riley, which is that in Riley, you had a manual phone search incident to arrest. Of course, that's going to be a brief search. So the idea, the government keeps talking about a brief manual search, that was what was at issue in Riley. The court never said, oh, we don't think there's going to be much of an invasion of privacy because it's happening when the person's next to their car and they're being arrested. The intrusiveness is extraordinary whether you characterize it as brief or not, and certainly border agents don't adhere to any particular...
Well, whether you characterize it as brief or not, but like, what if in fact it is brief? What if they look at the phone for 3 minutes just to see if there's anything obvious that you could like see immediately on the phone that indicates criminal activity, and they don't see anything and they let the person go on their way? You still think that is more intrusive than a body cavity search?
I mean, I don't know where to draw the line, Your Honor. I think that, the notion...
Sorry, so there is some category of brief manual searches that will not be very intrusive, right?
Well, I think that, if you're going to say, 30 seconds, a minute, I don't know where to draw the line. As I said before, as Judge Lee pointed out, the nature of the search is fundamentally different because of what the material that is at issue, which is the expressive material.
Okay, I think we have that argument. Thank you very much, Mr. Wilkins. The case is submitted.